Well, good morning, and I guess we ought to start promptly. Today is August the 12th, Thursday morning, first lecture. My name is George McCurdy. When I got the assignment of what this week's lecture was going to be about, the children of Israel making their journey through the wilderness, and how it applied to our own personal regeneration, I sat in my study and I began to run through my mind the whole story. I tried to look at it sequentially so that I could fully grasp it and reflect on it. That word reflection is an important one, because if you open the spiritual diary, or the spiritual experience as it's called now, you read these words, and I want to just read the quote from number 733. If people would attend to reflection, they would find more arcana, or heavenly secrets, in the doctrine of reflection than any other. Reflection. Just to try it out this morning, those of you wearing glasses, just for the moment, turn your attention to your glasses. Do you suddenly become aware of the pressure on the nose or on the ears? Those of you not wearing glasses, think for a minute about your waist. Do you suddenly become aware of a belt or the closeness of the clothes? If you turn your attention to your feet, do you suddenly become aware of the fact that you've got shoes on? Some have shoes, some don't. But you know what I mean. Reflection, it's a powerful, powerful tool. And so we're told that when we sit with the Word, we should involve reflection. And if we get involved in this reflection, more heavenly secrets can be found than in any other doctrine. That is a powerful, powerful teaching. And so what I've done is I've put together certain things on the table here that hopefully will reflect my reflection, and that it will stimulate and inspire you to have reflection. The Word of the Lord, isn't it wonderful? I mean, when you think of this book, which we call the Holy Bible, the Word, it was written by who knows how many authors over how many years. Stories about people, things that happened in the past, events, names, all of which we're told apply to our lives. And we're told that the angels to eternity read this Word, and they never, ever exhaust it. So here's a book of the past, for the present, for the future, to eternity. That's awesome. To show how important the Word is, Swedenborg was given a vision in heaven of a sanctuary. And again, use your reflection from it. He walked into the sanctuary, and in the center of the sanctuary was the Word opened up. And it shone like a star. And off of that star came rainbow colors. And an angel walked in and picked up the copy of the Word. And as the angel touched the Word, his hands began to shine.
And as he picked it up, it touched his clothes. And his clothes began to shine. And he had such a love for the Word, he put his face on the Word, and his face began to shine. And as it were, he became like a star, surrounded by the heavenly light of the Lord. What a powerful story. You and I have hands every day we do work. And I think what that story is telling us is, let our hands glow as we serve our uses. Be inspired by the things of the Lord and His Word. Our clothes, that represents the things that we clothe and protect our minds with. You know, we do need the warmth of clothing. So again, there's the symbolism, the reflection. Let what you clothe your mind glow. And the face, we're told, is like a mirror in which you see the image of the soul. So let our face shine with the things that are in our soul that we've gotten from our Lord. What a powerful, powerful thing. Now, we're told in the church teachings that this Word was written so that it could feed our soul. You know, it says at the moment of conception, the Lord flowed in and formed the soul, and through that soul, His energy flowed through and began to fold and multiply and add. So it says the soul is the first receptacle or plane of entrance of the Lord into our lives. And so this Word is written so our souls could become excited, so that our hearts could be touched. We're told that every truth of the Lord has a myriad of avenues to follow. And so by reflecting, we take a journey down this street. Everybody, as they look at the Word, is maybe carried a different way. And so my kaleidoscope. Kaleidoscope, what a wonderful toy. You know, as you hold it up and look in the sun and turn it, every time you turn it, there's a new form, a new design. Each truth in the Lord's Word has a myriad of avenues for us to follow. And He wants that. And the sad thing is, there are some people that do this and see nothing. You know, we must take our kaleidoscope and look at the Lord and His Son and turn it and see the multiplicity of wonderful, wonderful truths there. There's a passage in the Arcana, number 245, that says, the word of the Lord is spiritual and not verbal. Is that an interesting quote? The word of the Lord is spiritual, not verbal. So some people get caught up in just the verbiage. And so the Lord says, no, let your reflection, let the spiritual quality of my word just come forward. The word is written for our minds. And I want to read a quote that is absolutely an eye-stopper. The word is written for our minds. Have you ever thought about what a wonderful thing this is that we have called the mind? Some who have studied the mind say it is greater than the most supercomputer that's ever been made.
And I've thought about that from the time I was a baby going goo goo gaga and seeing comparisons, light, darkness, heat, cold, full, empty, wet, dry, to where I am today with the mind and the capacity. Listen to this quote from the Arcana. Whatever a person hears and sees and by which they are affected are unknown to that person, insinuated as to ideas and ends into their interior memory. They remain in that memory so that not a thing perishes, although it may be obliterated in the exterior memory. They are inscribed on that interior memory to every single and most singular thought that the person has ever thought, spoken, and done. Even those things which have appeared as but a shade, with the minutest particulars, from earliest infancy to the last days of old age. I mean, is that fantastic? Our mind has every single thing to the minutest detail inscribed and is not obliterated. And in the spiritual experience, it says, in the interior memory, nothing minuscule can be imagined that is not there. So the next time the hells try to tell you that you are a simple-minded, dumb person, pull this quote up. The mind is this tremendous device that the Lord has given us. And divine providence says that every day in 10,000 ways, I love that, in 10,000 ways, the Lord is with us. And if we could but see one thing that the Lord does for us in its completeness, and we could see the order, the perfection, the dynamics, that we would be amazed. Next time hell tells you you're dumb, pull that passage out and reflect on it. Every day, in 10,000 ways, the Lord is working with us. This process of growing smart, there's another passage that we need to think about. It says, the Lord's foresight and providence are in the minutest detail of our existence, as one out of 100 million. For a person's life involves a series of consequences extending to eternity. And I love this quote. Each moment being as a new beginning to those which follow.
So when you think of whole month, every day is the same existence, like, you know, every year, whole month, think about it, reflect on that each moment as a new beginning. How do we learn? How does the Lord teach us? Well, there's a passage in Isaiah, the 28th chapter, verse 10. I want to read it. Whom will the Lord teach knowledge? And whom will he make to understand his message? And how will the Lord teach? And here comes the formula. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And so the Lord is working with us. Layering. The Lord has a very wonderful way of instructing us. It's not as though he comes in and says, I'm going to cram this truth in you, and you're going to believe it. Again, listen to the teachings. Be it known. It is according to the law of the word of the Lord that no one should be persuaded about the truth in a moment. And so the Lord, when the truth is presented, allows the opposite, or a doubt, to surface. When a doubt comes in, he allows the truth to be deposited. It says what the Lord wants to do is to get us to think. And as we think what is true, what is false, what is false, what is true, it says to think this way, the Lord provides extension. Extension. He makes our lives interesting. Extension. And I do like that thought. When I have the truth, the Lord says, well, let's think about it. Here's a little doubt. But what we have to watch out for when we're talking in the church is, watch out for that negativism. I don't care what you say, you can't convince me otherwise, I have the same opinion still. There's a quote in the writings that talks about those who love to debate about the word. You know the story of Bacon, the philosopher? They said there was a philosopher standing around the corner one day, arguing about how many teeth a mule or a donkey has. So a kid walked up and said, why don't you open the donkey's mouth and count the teeth? And they ran the kid out of town for being insubordinate. They would rather debate about how many teeth the mule has than open their mouth to look inside. The writing says, be careful that you don't become one who merely debates about the word. For if you do, you are someone walking past the magnificent palace of wisdom, and you peek in the window, and then go on your journey, whereas those who are willing to look at the truth, and adapt the truth, and get that extension, like people that walk in and see the truths, and touch them.
Well, we know from the story of Israel that the journey that you and I are taking is not going to be easy. Do you remember the story of Genesis? It starts out, Exodus, there was a Pharaoh who came to power in Egypt, who knew not Joseph, nor Joseph's God. And it says that he looked around and he became aware of there are a lot of Israelites around here in this land. I fear them. I need to do something about this. And so he gave an order to the midwives. When you are at the birth of a child of Israel, when a male child comes, I want you to kill that child. That way we'll control the population. And the word says the maidservants, or the midwives, feared the Lord more than they feared Pharaoh. Man, is that something to think about? You know, we're in a world where we try to please other people before we try to please the Lord. The midwives feared the Lord more than they feared Pharaoh. And the more Pharaoh tried to do harm to the children of Israel, the word says they multiplied and they increased. That's a great thing to meditate and reflect on, isn't it? The more hell tries to do us harm, the more the Lord can multiply and increase. So that didn't work. And as we know the story, he started having them make bricks. Kind of reminds you of the story of the Tower of Babel, doesn't it? Instead of stone, they had bricks, and instead of mortar, they had slime. There's got to be something in the correspondence of it. And we say, it's very nice to make a brick. You can make it so that you can build, and you can keep it conformity, and you can keep rigidity there. And so what we are taught in the writings is that you and I, as we try to grow up, there's going to be a Pharaoh, there's going to be a ruling love in us that's going to have us make bricks. Well, you know what the bricks are like, the daily schedule. Kids have to go to school 12 years for high school. After high school, 4 years of college. After college, who knows how many years for a master's. Get married, pay for the house. We make bricks all the time. And what I like about this picture of the scale here is it says that as we look at the word, we can make comparisons and contrasts, and I wish this thing worked, but every truth that we learn is like a stone being put there. Little as it may be, it's a stone, it's a truth, and we get this wonderful tipping experience where little things that appeared not to be very important begin to carry weight. And there's the Lord, through comparisons and contrasts, through little truths, tipping the scale so that we have growth. But the Lord is telling us, you and I are going to get involved in making bricks. It's a tough task. And you remember the story, Pharaoh didn't see it wasn't working, and so he took the straw away from them to make it more difficult for them to make bricks. And the word says, then the children of Israel began to cry out to the Lord, save us, save us. And along comes this man named Moses. Lived 120 years, three segments of 40 years. 40 years he was with the Egyptians learning. 40 years he attended sheep for his father-in-law, and 40 years he was a spiritual shepherd. But it wasn't easy for Moses, because if you remember, when the Lord called him, he said, I can't do it. I don't speak very well. Ever had that feeling when someone says, what is a Swedenborgian? You stumble over your tongue and step on it. I don't speak very well. I don't have the fluidness to tell you what it's all about. So he made one excuse after another. Finally, if you remember the story, he said to Moses, what do you have in your hand? A dumb old stick. What a story that is to reflect on. The Lord took a rod. And you remember the wonderful things that happened? I mean, you know, his rod becoming a snake and eating up the snakes of those that the sorcerers provided. The dividing of the Red Sea. The water coming out of the rock. I mean, think about all the stories in the Lord's Word where little insignificant things became the Lord's greatest tool. Gideon, when he was called to overcome the Midianites, there were 200,000, I forget, that maybe that's the, who showed up. And no, it got whittled down to what, 300. And do you remember what the Lord said when it got down to 300? I have boiled the great number down to 300 so that you would not imagine that your victory was due to your own strength, but that you would remember your victory is because of my power. How about that story of Naaman, who had that terrible disease? He went from this person to that person, could not find a cure. And out of the background comes a little nameless maid who says, I know someone. I know a prophet. There's a man in the Old Testament called Shamgar, an old farmer. Probably don't know, and many of you don't know his name, but it says Shamgar, with an ox goad, slew 1,000 Philistines, just with an ox goad. You remember the story in the New Testament, the Lord standing, leaning against the wall in the temple, watching people come in, putting money into the treasury, and he saw a little widow come in and put 2 pence in. And it was that which was recorded. The Lord can do great things with what appeared to be just a stick. We need to reflect on that when we get feeling as though we're powerless. You know, hell loves to mock us. You surely have heard the voice of hell mocking you, particularly at New Year's Eve when we make resolutions. Do you ever hear that voice say, George, who are you kidding? You know, you made this promise last year and you never kept it. It says hell likes to come and say, look how vivacious I am. Look how adjustable I am. I mean, I don't get troubled if opinions go this way. I just adapt. But you Christians, you worry about sin, you know, regenerating. You're weak. You're sickly. We need to remember that the Lord can take little things and bring great, great victories. And so here's Moses. He shows up, let my people go, and finally Pharaoh lets them go. And they're running towards the Red Sea, and it says that when he touched the Red Sea with his rod, it parted. And the interesting thing about the writings say that what this is representative of is the sea parting, is that as you and I are trying to regenerate, the world or the proprium or whatever always tries to mock or block or interfere. And the parting of the Red Sea is representative of the Lord opening a way through all of that mocking and getting across. Well, the children walking through the wilderness were provided manna and quail. Do you remember, just this is a question, how many years did manna and quail get provided? A year? 2 years? 40 years. Is that awesome? 40 years of manna. Do any of you know what happened to their clothing? Did they stop periodically and go to Sam's Club and get? No, the same clothing for 40 years. Sandals that didn't wear out for 40 years. I mean, that's truly, truly awesome to think about what the Lord can do. Well, it says that Moses, 1 month after they started their journey, was called to Mount Sinai. And the Lord called Moses aside and said, I want you to prepare the people. They are for 3 days to go through a cleansing process. They're to wash their clothes, they're to do. And now here's a line around the base of the mountain. No one is to cross this line. If they do, they're going to die. Except for Moses. He was allowed to go up. And it says that the mountains shook. There was thunder. There was lightning. And the third day, a trumpet started to blow. And it says it started softly. And it increased. And it increased. And it increased. And then Moses came down, his face shining, with 2 tablets. One tablet, how to love the Lord. One tablet, how to love the neighbor. And the lesson that was read this morning, interestingly, follows Moses coming down with these 2 tablets where the Lord says, now I want you to build me an altar. And I want you to build that altar with stones that have not been hewn by any metal instrument. it would have been easier to build an altar with something that's, but I mean, imagine trying to put a stone upon a stone. But some of you who have seen the fences in New England, do you ever marvel how they built those fences? I mean, they're still standing. Have you seen them? Mile after mile of these stones that have been, but the Lord said, do not have a stone. So I wanted to read in the Arcana. To have built an altar with a hewn stone and stones on which iron has been used signifies to build the altar with that which is artificial. And thus, what is fictitious in worship, that is, what is of a person's own or the figment of his or her thought and heart. Question, do you see this, why it had to be a stone? I mean, from that teaching. The interesting thing that follows that is in Exodus, the 32nd chapter, when Moses comes down with the tablets and he sees that the golden calf that has been built, he really gets on Aaron's case and says, what were you thinking? Listen to Aaron's response. You know these people. They are evil. They brought to me their silver and their gold, and I put it in this pot, and out came a calf. I mean, was that a cop-out? You know these evil people. They brought me the silver gold. I put it in the pot, and out popped this calf. Does that sound like a brick to you? I want to tell you one humorous story. We were taught Bob and I were sharing this story about a teacher we had in theological school. He loved to have us speak extemporaneously, and his thought being that we need to think on our feet. And in theological school, there was a guy that said, I hate writing sermons. He said, I want to be the kind of guy that I can get up in the pulpit in the morning and I can open the word like this and put my finger on it and preach a sermon. And Judas went out and hung himself. He thought for a moment. He couldn't come up with a quick talk, so he closed it and he opened it again. And go and do thou likewise. We can't play games with the Lord's word. Because there's something in the word that we don't like. It makes us uncomfortable. We are not to take out and try to chip it and make it fit into our construct. The Lord is saying, if you're going to build a temple dedicated to worship me, make it out of those stones, those truths in the Word, as they are. I mean, that's a challenge to us. To put aside, you know, the book that Thomas Paine, or Bible Thomas Paine had, have any of you ever heard what his Bible looked like? He whatever he didn't like in the Word that he thought was, he would cut it out of his Word. And so when they found the copy of his Bible, it was literally, you know, this. But the sad part is when you cut this page out, you're cutting something out on the other side. But Thomas Paine didn't like this, so he was trying to take the metal and make it fit his construct. My last, can you all see this? Can you make it out? It's a beautiful picture, looking from the top of a mountain. And I want to read from Deuteronomy, the first chapter. Now it came to pass that in the 40th year, in the 11th month, and the first day of the month, that the Lord called Moses to speak to the people. And the Lord our God spoke to us, saying, you have dwelt long enough on this mountain. Turn now and take your journey and go to the mountains of the Amorites, to all the neighboring places in the plain, to the mountains in the lower land, go to the south, the sea coast, the land of Canaanites. Go. Well, we climbed a mountain yesterday. Almost killed me. But when we got to the top, it was a gorgeous, gorgeous view. But you could imagine the children of Israel after going through the... I mean, have any of you gone for a walk in sand? It's not easy to walk in sand. And so they got up and they were refreshing themselves. It must have been a wonderful cool breeze. And they were thinking, what year was it? The 39th year? The 11th month? I mean, they were within, and it's interesting too to think that normally that trip would have maybe taken at most 10 or 11 days if they'd gone, but 40 years. So they're up there getting refreshed, enjoying the view. And the Lord says, it's time to go down into that valley. Can any of you name how many enemies they met down in that valley? I tried to do it alphabetically, so share with me the names of some of them. But just for fun, how many of you remember some of the people that wrestled, didn't want them to succeed in the valley? Amalekites. Anything you remember about the strategy of the Amalekites? How they fought the children of Israel?
Oh, yeah. They were the ones that, when the younger ones were the sick ones that were in back, they would attack those and peel those off. And then.
Yeah, you and Debbie would have been in trouble yesterday walking up the mountain. You were the straggler. I kept trying to pull you up that mountain.
Yeah,
but
you were the last one.
but that Amalekites, can we relate to them, reflect on them? Have you ever gotten tired? You feel weak? That's probably when hell comes and nips at our heels. There's a wonderful phrase in the writing, getting over scrupulous in matters of spiritual unimportance. Have you ever gotten to the point where I'm getting old, crow's feet, somebody start laughing, crinkles in the neck, you know, we get work, do people like me? The Amalekites, snipping at your heel from behind. Okay. Anybody else? That's 1A. Another A. Amorites. They were nasty people. The ones that are coming next were even worse. I'll skip to them. The Ammonites. Any of you know how the Ammonites, what they would do to the enemy that they captured? They would embarrass them by first plucking their eyes out. Trying to blind your understanding. The Hittites, the Hivites, the Horites, the Jebusites, the Perizzites, the Moabites. The Moabites had a neat way. They would not work for themselves. They were called the fat ones. You know why they were called fat ones? Not because of their girth, but they had a philosophy of life. Why should I work when I can plunder the land of those who have planted? And when it's time for harvest, we go in and we, you know, strip the land and just leave a few grains on the ground in order not to starve them to death. But they were called the fat ones because they loved to live off of other people. The Philistines. Philistines had a god, half man, half fish. And I believe you mentioned they represent faith alone. But, you know, here are all these enemies, if I may put this, down in this valley waiting for them. Wouldn't it be nicer to stay up here, enjoy that? You know, why go down in the valley where all these people are still waiting to do you in? Well, Lois said when she heard I was going to do this, she said, you're not going to make this look like, well, vacation time's all over. No, that's not what it's about. I think what the Lord wants us to know is this spiritual journey on our regeneration is something that's going to be, we need to daily have our valley, have our mountains, have our valleys. But we've got to do a battle with the Amalekites who love to nip. We've got to do battle against that which tries to blind us. We've got to do battle against the hells that try to live off of us. And so as I look at the story that I wanted to bring you this morning, I wanted to inspire everyone sitting here this morning to have that feeling, I want to pick up the word of the Lord so that my hands may glow. I want the clothing of my mind to shine. I want my face to be a joyous thing where the soul just comes right out. I want us to have the thrill of adventure where every truth brings us a new pattern. I wanted us to feel that each moment is a new beginning. I wanted us to hear that every day in ten thousands of ways. The Lord has put together a package for us that is perfect. I wanted us to have these wonderful experiences where this mind of, I mean, think of glass. Can any of you imagine the first person that picked up some sand off the Saco could envision that there could be a pane of glass made? I mean, is this mind of ours potentially the greatest thing, even greater than some supercomputer? I mean, come on. We need to reflect on that. Every day, in some common way, the Lord's going to do powerful things with us. We've got to overcome our bricks. I mean, Pharaoh's going to tell us, you're going to make bricks. I've got to make a living. I've got to provide for the bricks. And I guess this last one is just a commitment. I'm going to let the Word be the Word. I'm not going to play games with it. I'm not going to try to fashion it the way I want it to come out. And enjoy. Get the fresh breeze. But no, we got to come down and we're going to face these dudes here. But it's the 30th, 39th year, the 11th month. And, you know, we're going to go into that promised land because the Lord said He was going to give it to us. And on that point, I want to stop so that I may get your comments, questions. Your reflection is really what I want. I want you to think. I want you to reflect because there are more heavenly secrets in reflection than in any other doctrine. I've gone far enough, long enough. Yes, sir.
Well, you reminded me of something I'm thinking of. Can we make correspondences in the modern world? Because you mentioned the Egyptians were, I believe they were worried the Israelites would eventually outnumber them because they were multiplying so quickly. I find it kind of ironic that in the modern world, the Palestinians are multiplying so quickly that the modern Israelites are worried about being outnumbered. I'm wondering, is that outside of using correspondences in Swedenborg, or can we try to think about
you can be a sham. You can be a Shamgar. Farmer, and I'm not putting farmer, but he was a simple man. 1,000 Philistines got slain with an ox goad. So what I'm saying, David, is I think that hell tends to say your God's too small. Or, you know, there are too many of those Philistines out there. I think what we need to do is, in simplicity, say, I'm going to do my job to get rid of those Philistines through my study and reflection and correspondence. I hope I answered your point. If not, come at me again.
Oh, and I remember reading Thomas Jefferson's Bible, which was really cut up. I didn't realize Thomas Paine had one too, but Jefferson's famous for his also.
Yeah. Maybe I got my Thomases mixed up.
I'm not sure.
Well, like you, I'm experiencing a wonderful calm. Oh, George.
Yeah. One thing struck me, never had, talking about bricks and making bricks. In Mesopotamia, when they're building a temple or a palace, they built these bricks in forms. And every single brick was inscribed, came out with a little message, which had... Who built it? What a great guy he was.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Every brick had, who built it and how great he was, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, keep the brick thing going.
Okay.
I worked for a company that made the tiles for the shuttle, the space shuttle. Protected from the heat. Every one was different. So these were not just found someplace. Every one was computer generated. So that shows the kind of complexity.
Yeah.
I don't know how to take it any further about it.
But, well, the detail.
The bricks are not uniform.
Okay. Yes.
I just wanted to say it was very meaningful to me to hear the way you talked about the Lord giving us the doubts as well as the truths, because we so often want to but it's actually an important part of building the faith, because it's the freedom in which to have the truth and the doubts at the same time, so that when you come to the truth and really own it, you own it with all your doubts having been satisfied.
And the extension. That's the thing I love, the extension. And there are people that get angry with the Lord. Why doesn't he say what he wants and mean what he says? You know, why do I have to go through this thing of wrestling with truth and doubt? You know, why can't it be so plain? Just open the word and there it is, there's the answer. Abortion is, there, boom. Whatever the issue is. Yes, Ed?
Could you expand on the use of the word extension there?
Extension meaning it carries your thought. I mean, you get to be able to relate it further. You get more insights. There's extension. There's growth. Yes, George.
You know, that passage that just is involved here says that this truth that you understand instantly and just glom onto is hard. It's impervious to the good that would make it adaptable. And when you meet people whose minds are so rigid, I've got it right, and anybody who disagrees with me, get out of my way. Mm-hmm. And that's the function of the doubt, is to soften the truth. And it ends by saying it has an extension even to include the opposite. We can actually understand somebody
the other point of view.
Which has a very, and the opposite even point of view. And we're not in this polar opposite.
Okay.
Damn you for not agreeing with me kind of stance. Yeah.
Okay.
And the whole image of soft truth, there isn't that kind of condemning. It doesn't have that condemning side to it. I think it's very important.
We have that expression, Ed, thinking outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
I remember clearly when I was in elementary school, or no, junior high school, there was a science teacher I absolutely adored. He was so good. But he got up to the board and went across as to why we'll never make it to the moon. And all the facts and figures he had were correct. You know, the size of the plane, the amount of fuel it could carry, the speed. But thank goodness there were other people who were willing to think outside of the box. There are those who said the world was flat. Well, we know that story. Galileo saw that the earth was not the center of the universe. There were people that could extension who were able. I saw a hand. Yes?
Right. I think it also has to do with time, in that something that you come to believe over time is, in a sense, standing the test of time. It's going to be more valid than something that you just believe in the moment. That passage you read started off with the phrase that meant the most to me, something about God doesn't do truths in the moment.
In the moment, yes.
And I'll never forget, in my first couple of years at Elmwood, a couple came for the first time to church, attended worship service. Afterwards, they said, "We love your church. How can we become members?" I said, "Okay, well, come to church a few times, get to know the people, get to know, you know, the way we do things, and if you want to become members, then we'll go about the process." Never saw them. And I mean, they were going to do it in the moment, but they had no willingness to stay with it over time and test their initial reaction. And I think that's a good example of what that passage is saying, you know, that truth that's owned over time with challenging it in our own mind and challenging it against life experience, and that it comes to be meaningful and true over time, is going to be much stronger, much more valid than something you just grabbed.
Yeah. And the thing I've tried to illustrate with all these little pebbles, you know, the first little pebble may not even cause, it may cause the scale to move a tad. But over the period of time, a little truth here, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there, and the wonderful tipping. And I think this story of the children of Israel going through the wilderness is like the tipping, the little stone, the little truth, the little application. Yes, Lois?
I was just thinking, I had also had a teacher one time that told me to
would be something a little different. I was looking at the map of the world and how Africa and fit in there if you got rid of the Atlantic between them. And I was extending my thought as I was looking at that, and I raised my hand and I said, you know what? It looks like they could be together. And the teacher said, Lois, don't you think that a lot smarter people would have thought of that before you? And she really didn't have that, never heard of Pangea or anything.
Ma'am. Four.
I think sometimes also we do the process and tend to talk about backwards. It's kind of like we have the experience through time, and all of a sudden we, you know, somebody says something, you hear something, someone reads something, and it's almost like the realization that something's true comes at the end.
Yeah.
And all the other pieces fit in place, and it's almost like you recognize what we hadn't known on a conscious level.
Yeah. One last quick story, maybe the young people can identify with this. I was a teacher 20 years in high school, and at Bernathan, once in a while, parents would ground their kids for something. Does that happen at your place? I don't know. But anyway, I had this one student who got grounded. He had agreed to meet his girlfriend at a little, we call it the JD, where you get ice cream and all that, and he'd arranged to meet her there. Well, he messed up and got grounded. And he really wanted to meet her, and it was amazing how quickly the mind can come up with truths. So he went home and said, you know, I've got a religion paper to do, and Mr. McCurdy has put the books on the reserve shelf, and the only place I can get the books is by going to the library. Now, what parent, having grounded their son or daughter, is going to prevent them from going to the library to get a book off the reserve shelf? So now it just so happened that on the way from his house, he had to pass the JD to get to the library. But isn't it amazing what this mind of ours can do to fashion truth to come out the way we want? I mean, I love that thing of Aaron. You know these people, they're evil. And they brought those silver and gold things to me. I dropped it in the pot and out popped this gold. It's not my fault. It's a wonderful story that I think we need to reflect on. Debbie, help me with time. I'm to go and stop when?
10 o'clock.
Stop now?
10 o'clock.
Okay, thank you very much.